I'm going to talk today about an extreme makeover. Extreme makeover. Who's seen the show Extreme Makeover? One of the types of shows, Extreme Makeover. All right. All right. I want to begin with reading the text that was read today by myself and Greg. And it's at the end of Exodus chapter 40. And so it begins in verse 34. It says, "Then the cloud covered the tent of the meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled upon it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. In all the travels of the Israelites, wherever the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they would set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set it out until the day that it was lifted. So the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and fire was in the cloud by night, and in the sight of all the house of Israel during all of their travels." What we have here is actually a do-over, so to speak, or what I'd call, as I would have titled this talk, an extreme makeover. And what I mean by that is that following the creation period, where everything was in right order, the earth was ravaged. And the plan of God was originally that the garden experience would extend over the entire earth, but there's a setback. And following the garden experience, there is murder and pillage. There's ultimately the flood that wipes away most of life on the earth. There's the establishment of the nations, the calling of Abraham, slavery in Egypt, the powerful deliverance by God of the Israelites out of Egypt, and so on. And now we come to Mount Sinai, and we have an extreme makeover. This is really what happens at Mount Sinai. Why do I say that? Because here we are. God's people are all gathered together. God's laws are now being given to them. And now there is a new house that is being built for God, and God himself is going to abide in this house, and actually does in this text. And what we have here is that the tabernacle, the Mishkan, is a picture of the creation, where God is once again the ruler. He's on his throne, and everything is in peace and harmony inside. And once again, the plan of God is to extend this thing, this peace and justice over the whole earth. That's the plan of God. That's why it's a makeover, in a sense. Everything is in order once again. Now, isn't it interesting that we have what we have here at Tikvat Israel is we've also had an extreme makeover, really, because it actually began in 1990 when we moved in here. In 1990, this place was a shell. It was a mess. And for those of you that were here, who was here back in 1990? There wasn't many, right? Not a few of us. Well, if you remember, this was originally a Baptist church. It was then became an Orthodox synagogue in the 1940s. It was that way for 30 years. And then for 15 years, it was vacant and it was a mess. And many people had a vision that a Messianic Jewish congregation would move in here. And so in 1990, when we were down here, we were meeting as a small group on the south side. We came down here to investigate, and the place was a mess. It was just a wreck inside and so on. And what's happened is there's been an extreme makeover, like you'd see on television. Not in one day. That would have been nice, right? but it did happen. And now what do we have here? Like the picture at Sinai. We have God's people, once again. We have God's laws. We have the menorah and the menorahs and the table right up here, just like in the tabernacle where the presence of the Lord was and so on. We have the screen, which guards the presence of the Lord and the laws like they were back at Sinai and so forth. We have the laws themselves in there, just like in the Ark of the Covenant. And then we have the Shekhinah, the presence of the Lord, like and represented by the light here resting over us. So it's in a sense, it's like an extreme makeover, like it was back in the creation period. And what's the purpose of a place like this? It's the same as it was back when the Mishkan was built on the earth. It's a place where God dwells. And when people enter the doors of this place, they enter in. I don't know if you realize this, but there's Hebrew on either side of the entranceways that comes from Genesis. And this is what it says in English. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. When people walk in here, they should feel something different. There should be something that happens to them when they walk in, because it's the presence of the Lord is in here. I remember years ago, we had a couple who was scheduled to, they were intending to go to Bethel, the conservative synagogue down the street, for a bar mitzvah, and they accidentally came in here thinking this was Bethel. And they sat in the service, and they started weeping. They didn't know what happened to them. It took them half the service to realize they were in the wrong place and stuff like that. But what had happened to them? The presence of the Lord enveloped them, just in a very similar to what Greg was talking about a little bit earlier. There's something, there's got to be something unique about this. I remember the first time that I was in the presence of people, in a meeting of people who believed in Yeshua. It was, I'd been invited to this small group in 1969. And I walked into this house where all these people were, and I didn't understand anything, but when I walked in, there was something different. I had no idea what it was. I didn't know what it was, and even as they talked, and they sang a few songs, and they talked about this guy Yeshua, who I'd never heard of, and didn't know anything about, but there was something different, and it drew me, it intrigued me, and it caused me ultimately to follow him. The goal, when people walk in here, folks, is that they should say two things. I was sharing this last night with a friend of Greg's who's here from England. They should say two things when they walk in there. This is a synagogue, and there's something different about this place. That's what I want people to say. That's all. I don't want. There's no way that people can walk in here and suddenly understand everything. It's impossible. But there's got to be something here that draws us into the presence of the Lord. Now, in God's house, we're called to act differently, right? I mean, God's people, Israel, they were to be different than the nations. They were to keep God's laws. That was to make them different. And then the Levites who were ministering in the tabernacle, they had to be even more different. They had to have more restrictions. They had to act differently. The priests who ministered in the center of the tabernacle had to be even more different because the Lord requires us to act differently when we're in his presence. Now, the prophet Isaiah foresaw a future where God's house would suddenly become a house of prayer for all nations, not just for the priests, not just for the Israelites, but for everybody. When Yeshua came to the second temple, if we all remember, in the second temple, there was, as the story goes in, he comes in and there's all these money changers and everything else are in there, and he gets all upset, and he throws the money changers over, throws the tables over. What's going on? Because what was in that, where the money changers were, that was the court of the Gentiles. That's where the Gentiles were allowed to come, and they couldn't get in because the money changers were in the way. And Yeshua casts the tables over, and he says, why is this the case? Because this is supposed to be a house of prayer for all nations. That's the whole point, where we come in and we experience something different. Yeshua himself, as it says in the apostolic writings, he broke down the dividing wall between Jew and Gentile. Now God receives everybody who calls upon his name, whatever their background is, and so on, so that you can experience him. But, and let's all say but together, but when we enter God's house, we've got to act differently, just like they did back then. Now, this is not what I mean, what I'm going to describe here. Let's take your typical family on their way Saturday morning to the synagogue, driving down the road, and guy's driving, the husband's driving his car and somewhere like that. All of a sudden, wife gets a little excited. He's driving a little fast, you know. Wonder if that's my family. But Stacy and I, of course, drive separately, so I don't worry about that. But anyway, so we're driving. So the wife says, honey, please slow down. I got to get to the synagogue in time. No, please slow down. No, I need to get here. It's got to be, Jamie calls, tells me I've got to be here on time, and I'm already running late. I've got to go. And she starts to, you know, squabble with him. And all of a sudden, the children in the back, daddy, daddy, be quiet, be quiet. Daddy, daddy, be quiet, be quiet. Watch out. No, slam on the brake. Oh, my God. Everything else. Everything. Everybody's all tense and stuff. They come in to walk into the synagogue. Shabbat shalom. It's good to see you today. How lovely we are in the presence of the Lord, right? That's not what I'm talking about when I'm talking about acting differently by coming into God's house, right? That's not the idea. Because the Lord says that we are to be holy, for I am holy, says the Lord. And so to be part of God's house, we need to be able to act differently all of the time. I think there's one thing, there's probably many things that drive the Lord crazy. But you know what really drives him crazy? Is what I call doctrinaire people. These are folks where everything has to be right except the way they treat other people. That's the difference. Everything else has to be right. So we've got to be on time in everything that we do. We've got to be organized. The prayers have to be said exactly the right way and so on. You have to be very modest in appearance. But then if somebody scantily dressed shows up at the synagogue, or they've experienced failures or whatever, or if it's like Joseph Turlow here with weird colored hair or whatever it is, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Something has happened. You see? And the Lord judges the doctrinaire people, because that's not the way it's supposed to be. Yeshua tells the story, a very well-known story, about this. It's about a dude who gets robbed, and he's beaten, and he's not by the side of the road, and he's struggling. And all of a sudden, a priest walks by in Yeshua's story. Now, this is very important, because the priests are supposed to be the holiest of the people. So the priest walks by, sees that guy. You know, it's like, oh man, he's trouble. Got to walk on by, leaves him alone. Then the next guy's a Levite. The Levites also, they're a little lower down than the priests, but they also are to live holy lives and so on like that. They look at the dude and they walk on by. They won't have anything to do with him. And then the story goes, there's a Samaritan. Now in the biblical times, the Samaritans were hated by the Jews. They were dirt. They were dogs. But this guy goes and he patches him up, and he takes him at an inn, and he pays for his care, and he restores him, and so on and so forth. We all know the story really, really well. But the point of the story is this. You see, it's what's most important as far as acting differently is how we treat other people. That's the test. The Apostle John says this. You say you love God, you hate your brother, you're a liar. That's all there is to it. We can have these outward forms, but it's not real. That's the problem. Now, I'm not against being organized, being on time. I think that's all important, of course. But the problem is that sometimes the most rigid people are typically struggling with those very issues that they impose upon other people. They can't seem to conquer it in their own lives. And so they try to impose it upon other people as well. It's really sad. Here's the question. Is this congregation, is this building a shell, or is it a place where God resides? That's really what the question has to be. You see, this is a beautiful place. It has really experienced an extreme makeover. It is a beautiful building. But if the people who come in are not right with God, or if they're not right with one another, then it's a shell. It becomes a historic building, not a living building, like it was in the past. We all know, many of us have heard, but I'll just quickly repeat it again. Mo Slate down here, long before we moved in here, probably over 20 years ago, had a vision of this place. At that time, it was a historic building. It was vacant. There was no one in here. It was just a shell and so forth. But he saw in this vision that suddenly, one day, that the doors would be open, that there'd be people streaming out, in and out of the doors, that the big stars of David on the sides would be pulsating, would be bright with light, and the building would be pulsating with life, and so on. That's what he saw. We moved in here a few years later at Hanukkah, 1990, and those of you all remember, or some of you remember, the great miracle of the incredible provision of oil, the 1,000 gallons of oil that suddenly appear here in the building and enable us to live through the entire winter without having to pay for the oil and so on. Significantly, of course, oil is what's important about Hanukkah, but it also represents God's Spirit. It was a sign that God was going to be here, that this place was going to be different. And so it underwent an extreme makeover. This building did that. And it's been living ever since, pulsating with life. But if we come here with the wrong spirit, it's going to become a shell again, and even worse. That's the problem. You see, we need to see ourselves as performing tikkun olam when we come into this place. In other words, we're repairing the world by first getting ourselves right with God, and then getting ourselves right with others, and then going out and bringing the light of God to those around about us. That's really our mission here in this congregation. Very simple. Yeshua told this story. We all know this story pretty well. Many of us know the New Testament. But he told this story about there was this debtor who had this massive debt to this creditor. And he went to the creditor, and he pled with the creditor, and he said, please forgive my debt. And the creditor said, okay, I'll let it go. And then this debtor had another person who was indebted to him for a very small amount of money. And so the other debtor went to the first debtor and said, please forgive my debt. And he said, no, absolutely not. You're going to go to jail. You're going to go on so on and so forth for this and so forth. And so the original creditor went, found out about this story and told this debtor that you're going to be cast into outer darkness. You see, the problem is that so often we have little mercy upon one another, but we don't recognize that it's God's great mercy for even allowing us to be even in this place, to be in his presence, to have our sins forgiven for what Yeshua did for us and so on. And so we often just, you know, it's like, it's as if everything, you know, it's as if we know God's ways until we're in a conflict situation ourselves, and then suddenly it doesn't matter anymore because we've got to get our way and so forth. But we need to recognize how important it is for forgiveness, for mercy to others, no matter what the state, what the case is. Now, it's interesting. The Mishkan, the tabernacle, was an extreme makeover on the earth. It was like the earth was being made over again, and the Mishkan was the example of it. We've seen the extreme makeover here in this synagogue as the building has undergone tremendous change. But there's also an extreme makeover in individual lives. As I said earlier, the first day that I really heard about Yeshua in 1969, I had no idea what was in store for me. No idea whatsoever. Some who come into the presence of the Lord, or who hear about Yeshua, or whatever the case might be, they realize that they need an extreme makeover because they're a mess, right? And so they don't like the way they look, just like on television, and so they want to undergo this whole change and so on. And the Lord really honors that and so forth. But there's others who come and they're doing okay. You know, in other words, it's like they've they're relatively happy, they're not totally bummed out on life and everything else. But when they come, they realize that there's something more. There's something that they're missing. And there's something that draws them. And so they begin to undergo an extreme makeover as well. It's just that they weren't as conscious of it, that they needed it as much as the other person. It doesn't really matter because God is in the extreme makeover business. That's the whole point. Now, I've shared this scripture the last few times I've spoken, and I'm not exactly sure why the Lord wants to reiterate this, but it's in Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. And this is about individual makeovers. Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. And the worship team can get into place. That'd be nice. It says, "Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. And if anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me." Now, when Yeshua enters somebody's life, when they enter their heart, they don't enter into a vacant house, right? They're not coming in. It's like you've had a life. You've already lived, depending on your age. You've already lived and so on. And our houses are usually in some form of disarray. In other words, the chairs, they're not in the best shape anymore. The upholstery's maybe kind of torn up and so forth like that. Worn and ripped. Floors maybe a bit mottled and so on. And Yeshua comes in and begins to look around, begins to make changes, and then all of a sudden, there's the refrigerator, the old refrigerator. I have to tell you a story about the old refrigerator. This was in college, senior year. We had this little refrigerator in the room. And I'm a kind of a messy person, but my roommate, man, he took the case. And this refrigerator hadn't been opened in a few months. And I knew there was like old milk in there and other things like that. And so I was nervous, so we called this guy Broadway Joe. I said, "Joe, you got to clean this refrigerator out before we leave." He said, "No, man, I'm not going to open that baby." And I said, no, you got to do it. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's gone. He leaves for the year. I'm left with this refrigerator. So I didn't know what to do with it because I knew I would probably pass out if I opened this refrigerator up. And so because it was a small refrigerator, you know, a little one you use in a dorm room, I carried it with me to the bathroom and opened it over the toilet. Just opened it up, let everything just drop into the toilet, boom, like this. And all of a sudden, it was like this, poof, this incredible gaseous smell that was beyond belief. You see, sometimes our lives are like that when Yeshua comes in, right? It's a mess. They really are a mess. And he's involved in an extreme makeover when he comes in. See, the reality is this. Whether we know, some of us have maybe known the Lord for a long time. And the reality for houses is like this. When we moved into our house, it was a new house, right? Brand new. We came from an older home in Maryland down to Virginia, got a brand new house. It was really beautiful. But over time, an inhabited house gets dirty, right? Things happen there. All new furniture in the beginning is not new anymore. You get dusty, moldy, stuff like that. I remember in our basement downstairs in this new house over time, because it wasn't being ventilated properly and it got a lot of moisture in it, that mold began to grow on the ceilings and on the walls. It was hard to see, but then I finally realized it. And so what did I have to do to get rid of that mold? You know, I talked to some painters, a painter in this congregation, who said, well, you can't paint over the mold. It's just going to keep growing. So you have to, like, cleanse it. You have to wash it away with bleach or whatever it is to kill all the mold off. It needs an extreme makeover. And that's what I did. So I went through this extreme makeover. You know what? Maybe that's with you. My question is, where are you today? Where are you? Do you need an extreme makeover in that sense, inside? Can the presence of the Lord rest on you today? Because he can only rest where there's holiness, in the Mishkan, where it's been cleaned and cleansed. He wants to rest on you and me, just like he did back then. Have you had an extreme makeover at all, ever? And if you have you let things go to pot, so to speak, and you need a makeover right now? And as I say that, I just want us to worship in this song, listen, and let's hear the words, and let's enter in, and let's allow the Lord to minister a makeover to you and me.